The same thing happened over again 5 minutes later. Footsteps in the corridor, a face around the door, the same frank stare. "So you're the guy." This time the face was leaner and darker, younger. Shirt and tie below it, no jacket. Reacher stared back 3 or 4 seconds. The face disappeared and the door slammed. This time the silence lasted longer, somewhere around 20 minutes. Then a third face came to stare. Footsteps, the rattle of the handle, the door opening, the stare. "This is the guy, huh?" This third face was older again, a man somewhere in his 50s. A competent expression, a thatch of gray hair. He wore thick glasses, and behind them his eyes were calm. Serious speculation in both of them. He looked like a guy with responsibilities, maybe some kind of a bureau chief. Reacher stared back at him wearily. No words were spoken, no communication took place. The guy just stared for a spell, and then his face disappeared, and the door closed again. Whatever was happening outside kept on happening for the best part of an hour. Reacher was left alone in the room, sitting comfortably on the floor, just waiting. Then the waiting was over. A whole crowd of people came back together, noisy in the corridor, like an anxious herd. Reacher felt the stamp and shuffle of footsteps. Then the door opened, and the gray-haired guy with the eyeglasses stepped into the room. He kept his trailing foot near the threshold and leaned his weight inside at an angle.
"Time to talk," he said.
The two junior agents pushed in behind him and took up station like an escort. Reacher waited a beat, and then he jacked himself upright and stepped away from his corner.
"I want to make a call," he said.
The gray-haired guy shook his head.
"Calling comes later," he said. "Talking comes first, okay?"
Reacher shrugged. The problem with getting your rights abused was that somebody had to witness it for it to mean anything. Somebody had to see it happen. And the two young agents were seeing nothing, or maybe they were seeing Moses himself coming down and reading the whole Constitution off big tablets of stone. Maybe that's what they would swear to later.
"So let's go," the gray-haired guy said.
Reacher was crowded out into the gray corridor and into a big knot of people. The woman was there, and the sandy guy with a mustache, and the older guy with the blood pressure, and the younger guy with the lean face and the shirt sleeves. They were buzzing. It was late in the evening, but they were all pumped up with excitement. They were up on their toes, weightless with the intoxication of progress. It was a feeling Reacher recognized. It was a feeling he had experienced more times than he cared to remember. But they were divided. They were two clear teams. There was tension between them. It became obvious as they walked. The woman stuck close to his left shoulder, and the sandy guy and the blood pressure guy stuck close to her. That was one team. On his right shoulder was the guy with the lean face. He was the second team, alone and outnumbered, and unhappy about it. Reacher felt his hand near his elbow, like he was ready to make a grab for his prize. They walked down a narrow gray corridor like the bows of a battleship, and spilled into a gray room with a long table filling most of the floor space. The table was curved on both long edges and chopped off straight at the ends. On one long side, backs to the door, were 7 plastic chairs in a line, well spaced out, with the curve of the table edge focusing them all across toward a single identical chair placed in the exact center of the opposite side. Reacher paused in the doorway, not too difficult to work out which chair was his. He looped around the end of the table and sat down in it. It was flimsy. The legs squirmed under his weight, and the plastic dug into the muscles under his shoulder blades. The room was cinder block, painted gray like the first one, but this ceiling was finished. There was stained acoustic tile in warped framing. There was track lighting bolted to it with large can-shaped fixtures angled down and toward him. The tabletop was cheap mahogany, thickly lacquered with shiny varnish. The light bounced off the varnish and came up into his eyes from below. The two junior agents had taken up position against the walls at the opposite ends of the table, like sentries. Their jackets were open and their shoulder holsters were visible. Their hands were folded comfortably at their waists. Their heads were turned, watching him. Opposite him, the two teams were forming up, 7 chairs, 5 people. A gray-haired guy took the center chair. The light caught his eyeglasses and turned them into blank mirrors. Next to him, on his right-hand side, was the guy with the blood pressure, and next to him was the woman, and next to her was the sandy guy. The guy with the lean face and the shirt sleeves was alone in the middle chair of the left-hand three, a lopsided inquisition, hunching toward him, indistinct through the glare of the lights. The gray-haired guy leaned forward, sliding his forearms onto the shiny wood, claiming authority, and subconsciously separating the factions to his left and right.
"We've been squabbling over you," he said.
"Am I in custody?" Reacher asked.
The guy shook his head.
"No, not yet."
"So, I'm free to go?"
The guy looked over the top of his eyeglasses.
"Well, we'd rather you stayed right here, so we can keep this whole thing civilized for a spell."
There was silence for a long moment.
"So make it civilized," Reacher said. "I'm Jack Reacher. Who the hell are you?"
"What?"
"Let's have some introductions. That's what civilized people do, right? They introduce themselves. Then they chat politely about the Yankees or the stock market or something."
More silence. Then the guy nodded.
"I'm Alan Deerfield," he said. "Assistant Director, FBI. I run the New York field office."
Then he turned his head to his right and stared at the sandy guy on the end of the line and waited.
"Special Agent Tony Poulton," the sandy guy said, and glanced to his left. "Special Agent Julia Lamar," the woman said, and glanced to her left.
"Agent in charge, Nelson Blake,"
the guy with the blood pressure said.
"The three of us are up here from Quantico. I run the Serial Crimes Unit. Special Agents Lamar and Poulton work for me there. We came up here to talk to you."
There was a pause, and the guy called Deerfield turned the other way and looked toward the man on his left.
"Agent in charge, James Kozo," the guy said. "Organized crime here in New York City. Working on the protection rackets."
More silence.
"Okay now?" Deerfield asked.
Reacher squinted through the glare. They were all looking at him. The sandy guy, Poulton, the woman, Lamar. The hypertensive Blake, all three of them from Serial Crimes down in Quantico. Up here to talk to him. Then Deerfield, the New York bureau chief, a heavyweight. Then the lean guy, Kozo, from organized crime, working on the protection rackets. He glanced slowly left to right and right to left, and finished up back on Deerfield. Then he nodded.
"Okay," he said. "Pleased to meet you all. So, what about those Yankees? You think they need to trade?"
5 different people facing him, 5 different expressions of annoyance. Poulton turned his head like he had been slapped. Lamar snorted, a contemptuous sound in her nose. Blake tightened his mouth and got redder. Deerfield stared and sighed. Kozo glanced sideways at Deerfield, lobbying for intervention.
"We're not going to talk about the Yankees," Deerfield said.
"So what about the Dow? We going to see a big crash anytime soon?"
Deerfield shook his head.
"Don't mess with me, Reacher. Right now, I'm the best friend you got."
"No, Ernesto A. Miranda is the best friend I got," Reacher said. "Miranda versus Arizona, Supreme Court decision in June of 1966. They said his Fifth Amendment rights were infringed because the cops didn't warn him he could stay silent and get himself a lawyer."
"So?"
"So, you can't talk to me until you read me my Miranda rights.
Whereupon you can't talk to me anyway because my lawyer could take some time to get here, and then she won't let me talk to you even when she does. The three agents from Serial Crime were smiling broadly, like Reacher was busy proving something to them.
Your lawyer is Jody Jacob, right?
Deerfield asked.
Your girlfriend?
What do you know about my girlfriend?
We know everything about your girlfriend, Deerfield said. Just like we know everything about you, too.
So why do you need to talk to me?
She's at Spencer Gutman, right?
Deerfield said.
Big reputation as an associate. They're talking about a partnership for her, you know that?
So I heard.
Maybe real soon.
So I heard, Reacher said again.
Knowing you isn't going to help her, though. You're not exactly the ideal corporate husband, are you?
I'm not any kind of a husband.
Deerfield smiled.
A figure of speech is all. But Spencer Gutman is a real white shoe operation. They consider stuff like that, you know, and it's a financial firm, right? Real big in the world of banking, we all know that, but not much expertise in the field of criminal law. You sure you want her for your attorney? Situation like this?
Situation like what?
Situation you're in.
What situation am I in?
Ernesto A. Miranda was a moron, you know that?
Deerfield said.
A couple of smokes short of a pack. That's why the damn court was so soft on him. He was a subnormal guy. He needed the protection. You a moron, Reacher? You a subnormal guy?
Probably, to be putting up with this shit.
Rights are for guilty people, anyway. You already saying you're guilty of something?
Reacher shook his head.
I'm not saying anything. I've got nothing to say.
Old Ernesto went to jail anyhow, you know that? People tend to forget that fact. They retried him and convicted him just the same. He was in jail 5 years. Then you know what happened to him?
Reacher shrugged, said nothing.
I was working in Phoenix at the time, Deerfield said, down in Arizona, homicide detective for the city, just before I made it to the Bureau. January of 1976, we get a call to a bar. Some piece of shit lying on the floor, big knife handles sticking up out of him. The famous Ernesto A. Miranda himself, bleeding all over the place. Nobody fell over themselves rushing to call any medics. Guy died a couple of minutes after we got there.
So?
So stop wasting my time. I already wasted an hour stopping these guys fighting over you. So now you owe me. So you'll answer their questions, and I'll tell you when and if you need a damned lawyer.
What are the questions about?
Deerfield smiled.
What are any questions about? Stuff we need to know is what?
What stuff do you need to know?
We need to know if we're interested in you.
Why would you be interested in me?
Answer the questions and we'll find out.
Reacher thought about it, laid his hands palms up on the table.
Okay, he said. What are the questions? You know Brewer versus Williams, too?
The guy called Blake said. He was old and overweight and unfit, but his mouth worked fast enough.
Or Duckworth versus Egan?
Polton asked. Reacher glanced across at him. He was maybe 35, but he looked younger, like one of those guys who stays looking young forever, like some kind of a graduate student preserved. His suit was an awful color in the orange light, and his mustache looked false, like it was stuck on with glue.
You know Illinois and Perkins?
Lamar asked. Reacher stared at them both.
What the hell is this? Law school? What about Minnick versus Mississippi? Blake asked.
Holden smiled.
McNeil in Wisconsin? Arizona and Fulminant? Lamar said.
You know what those cases are? Blake asked.
Reacher looked for the trick, but he couldn't see it.
More Supreme Court decisions, he said, following on from Miranda. Brewer was 1977, Duckworth 1989, Perkins 1990, Minnick 1990, McNeil 1991, Fulminant 1991, all of them modifying and restating the original Miranda decision.
Blake nodded.
Very good.
Lamar leaned forward. The light scatter off the shiny tabletop lit her face from below like a skull.
You knew Amy Callan pretty well, didn't you?
She asked.
Who?
Reacher said.
You heard, you son of a bitch.
Reacher stared at her. Then a woman called Amy Callan came back at him from the past and slowed him just enough to allow a contented smile to settle on Lamar's bony face.